possible, but you better not fall asleep on me. Let me just put it that way. You know, I used to have these nightmares that I would dream I was preaching and wake up and I really was. So I don't want that to happen today either. So bear with me. Crystal says I'm better when I'm like this. She says you got to rely on the Lord more. So we're going to rely on the Lord a lot today. I want to talk to you today because I think that it's a good time to look back at the year. The new year's approaching. And I don't want us to jump into next year ill-equipped. The name of this sermon is entitled Sold Out, obviously, and we probably heard that a lot whenever we went trying to find things for Christmas. It's something, when things are sold out, it's frustrating because we go and we try to find something special for someone. And I remember when the girls were small and I made a terrible mistake when we got married. I bought Crystal a holiday Barbie doll right when we first got married. And that set up a chain of events that was tragic, you know, because that meant after that year, we had to go back. And I can tell you horror stories, you know, signing letters of wait lists. And we had to, there's an incredible story about my mother-in-law actually high-stepping it through the brindles that are, you know, and I think just kind of shoving children out of the way, if I remember, so we could have this holiday barbecue. But if it's like anything else, this year I guess it was the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox, and it wasn't unusual for people to say they're sold out. I read a story, and I don't know how in the world they ever figured this out. You remember the Tickle Me Elmos? You remember they were a big, big toy? I read this week that there was a store in Newark, New Jersey, when these toys came out, that sold 400 Tickle Me Elmos in 10 minutes. Can you imagine? I mean, how do you even do that? You know, I thought the only way they could figure that out is the display must have been gone in 10 minutes. I know some of you saw online the tragic circumstances of Black Friday, you know, the Walmart in Elkin and all that mess. You know, just all kinds of stuff, people getting shot over things because things get sold out. Or we're afraid they're going to get sold out. I want to talk to you about what that means to be sold out. Sold out means that we don't have any more to give. You know, and the thing about it is, you can go to a store that's sold out of something, and you can beg them. You can ask them, are you like me? And you say, do you have any more in the what? In the back, because you're like me. Yeah, and they, no, this is all we got, you know, and they're just shot, you know, they're worn out because of the Christmas rush, but we're sold out. I have nothing more to give. It doesn't matter how much you beg. It doesn't matter what you do. There's none left. There's nothing left. I'm completely sold out. Wait a minute, get me back on that. Get me out. Okay, all right. Okay, thank you. I'm glad it's working. Good, we'll be on that in a minute. Sold out. And as we think about what it means to be sold out, I want us, as I said, I want us to rehash the year that we've just spent, 2013. And I want to ask you if that describes the way that you are to God. I'm sold out. There is absolutely nothing left of me that He can't have because I've given everything. See, when they sell out of something, they've given all the product away. They didn't give it away, they sold it away. It was bought at a price. Just as we were bought at a price, have you given everything? Are you sold out? See, I think that we're funny. In society, I'm amazed at how so many people know so much about everything. Because I feel I'm really stupid about a lot. I'm amazed sometimes at how stupid I can be. It's a good thing I'm not a heart surgeon. It's a good thing that I don't work on cars. When we stop and think about how much we do know, some of us might feel pretty good. But just for a second, I want you to think about the amount of stuff you don't know. The total tonnage of things you don't know. I want to tell you something. Whenever I was younger than the girls, I was on top of technology. You know, when I was growing up, I knew about CDs and computers and video games and all kinds of stuff. And I was really on the cutting edge. I hate that term. But I was really on the cutting edge of knowing about technology. But something happened, and technology left me behind. And a lot of you feel the same way. You know, you're just barely treading water. You know, you can do emails, you know, and that's about it. Now, some of you, like I was impressed, Renita was talking, they texted me something on my on my telephone. I was, have we got the telephone? Just hand me the telephone for just a second. I want you to see something. Renita and Forbes texted me about a surgery and gave me the message. Now, let me just show you the kind of telephone that I have. This is my track phone. I pay as I go. All right? I spend $20 every 3 months, and it is awful. Listen to this. Whenever I turn it on in the store, you know, my children want to run. They hear that, and they are humiliated by how ignorant their father is when it comes to technology. All right? Renita texted me, and I got the text, and that took me long enough to figure out how to do that. And let me tell you, I still don't know how to text back. You know, I don't have a clue. I know I can do it, but I don't know how to do it. If I want to know how to do it, you know who I have to ask? One of these two. Because they're just fearless when it comes to that stuff. But it's hard to believe that technology just left me behind. And the reason I bring this up is because I knew a lot at one time about technology. Now I don't know anything about technology. And I say that because there's so much that we don't know. Yeah, I did know, but now I don't know. I want you to think for just a moment about the things you do not know. And I mean, I can watch a football game and commercials come on about iPhones or about Sprint and stuff like that. And I mean, they might as well just be speaking another language to me because I am completely toned. I don't even know what the product they're selling is most of the time. It's just 30 minutes of white noise to me. And I think about something else until the game comes back on or whatever else comes. I'm so ignorant about stuff that exists in technology. But it's not just that. Like I said, I don't know things about heart surgery. I don't know things about motor cars. I know where the gas goes. You know, I know where the oil goes, although I've never changed oil in my life. You know, things like I have a general knowledge. But there's so much I don't know. And if you're honest with yourself, there's so much you don't know. And then the reason I'm setting you up for this, because I want to ask you this question. If we're so dumb, then why do we always have such faith in ourselves to know what's best for us? Frequently, not only to know what's best for us, but to also know what's best for everybody else. Doesn't make sense, does it? If we are so stupid, then why do we know what's always best for us? I've never heard anyone say, well, I don't, you know, well, this looks like it's horrible for me, so I'll go ahead and do that. I'll take a chance. We always are come back to thinking of ourselves first, and we think, this isn't going to work for me because this is what's best for me. How do you know? How do you know yourself so well? When we come to God today, a lot of us want to come to God on our own terms. We just celebrated Christmas, and no doubt many of us met with family, and someone in the family had the dubious task of trying to arrange everything to accommodate everyone, didn't we? Isn't that fun? We share that burden with four brothers and Crystal. She has four brothers, and although there's two that are sorry, they never host it. There's three of us that end up shifting it, you know, and it's the dread of who's in charge this year. That fight usually starts around Thanksgiving. You know, who's going to get it? Actually, it's more Labor Day, isn't it? Yeah, we start planning it Labor Day, and we try to get out Labor Day, you know, to where we don't hang around too long at Grandma's when the family comes in at Labor Day, because we know sooner or later it's going to come. What are we going to do for Christmas this year? Oh, you know, let's get out of here. Otherwise, we're going to be stuck with it, you know. And so some of you had that wonderful, dubious responsibility this year. And it's nearly impossible to make it available and comfortable for everyone, isn't it? And don't you love when people inform you of how inconvenient something might be, even though you're trying your best to tell them that the plans suit everyone else but them? We have a problem with trust in this world. We have a problem with the notion that someone else might have more foresight or planning than ourselves, that someone else might know better than ourselves, that they may possess greater knowledge about a situation, so much so that we can let down our guard and relax a little bit. When we come to God, it's hard to believe sometimes that He knows better than us what is best, because we don't think anyone else knows what's best for us. And I'm afraid that many times we come into our relationship with God and we think the same about Him. When we look at our nation today, when we look at society today, we see so many things that are wrong and we complain about so much. And I understand that. I get frustrated too. But could we possibly be going through a time in which God is calling us back to Him through difficulty, through tragedy, through suffering? Maybe because He's tried other things and they didn't work. Because we had a choice whether to choose His way or our way, and we always chose our way because we thought our way was best. So sometimes He has to get our attention. Sometimes we have to suffer. Sometimes we have to go through unpleasant things in order to get in line with what's really best for us. And so, Mark, that doesn't make any sense. Yes, it does. Not everything that's best for you is always fun for you. My children never liked being disciplined. I confess, I didn't either. But it was what was best for me. Was it fun for me? No. Was it best for me? Yes. Are there times when God, our Heavenly Father, reaches down and says, look, I know this may not be fun, but trust me, it's what's best for you. And we say, well, how do you know what's best for me? I know what's best for me. Go back. How much do you really know? I said before, it's hard to relax and let down our guard because we are so possessive of our time. It's funny, we talk a lot in Wednesday night studies about free will and predestination. And that's a topic people don't like because we want to believe that we have control of everything that happens to us, don't we? And I'll make the argument, why do you care if you have complete free will or if it's predestined by God? Don't you trust God enough that He is going to do what's best for you? And that bothers people. I said, well, I like to believe I've got control. I understand that. I like to believe that too. But if I can truly trust God with everything, what difference does it make? If I'm committed to Him and He knows what's best for me? I want you to look with me into some scripture. Luke chapter 14. And this is a parable of a great banquet. It begins with verse 16. Jesus is telling it. It says, Jesus replied, a certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, I have just bought a field and I must go and see it. Please excuse me. Another said, I have just bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. Still another said, I just got married, so I can't come. The servant came back and reported this to his master. Then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servant, go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, what you ordered has been done, but there is still room. Then the master told his servant, go out to the roads and country lanes and make them come in so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those men who were invited will get a taste of my banquet. Now you could look at this story and you could say this is a story about the Jews and the Gentiles in that the Jews rejected Christ. Christ was the messenger. The banquet was thrown by the Father. Christ went out to try to call the lost sheep of Israel, but the Gentiles, they got their opportunity because the Jews found, you know, they didn't accept Him. You could take that, and that's one interpretation of the Scripture, and I can see that. But that's not the only interpretation of the Scripture. I think there's a whole lot more to it than that. I think that it is, no doubt, the Father, but I think there's a sense of priority here that touches the very heart of Jew and Gentile alike. I think it transcends whether it's Jew or Gentile. And I want you to notice something about these particular verses. These excuses are not bad. One of them got married, that's a pretty good reason why you can't do something. One of them just bought oxen, you know, and they needed to try them out. You know, it's important. Maybe it was a way that they made a living with this oxen. Maybe they were farmers and they needed these oxen. I need to go try them out because it's the way I make my living. You know, again, that's not necessarily a bad excuse. Marriage, family, what you do for a living, not bad excuses. And then the other one, just bought some real estate. Maybe it's where he's going to set his home. So we could have had a home situation, we could have had a work situation, and we had a marriage situation. So we can say family, home, and work. Those are all good excuses, don't you think? I mean, really. I mean, you know, we don't hesitate. I mean, I understand those kind of things. I work at the mag's office. You know, I work for the state. Sometimes I've had to work on Sundays in the past. I mean, it's a fact. But then I get a little frightened when I read on, because God doesn't accept these excuses. Did you see that? That's really scary. Because these excuses are good excuses. They're noble excuses. But they're not good enough for God. That's kind of frightening to me. Because we understand these excuses. But did you see what he said? After they gave these excuses, the servant came back, reported this to his master, and the owner of the house got angry and ordered his servant. He said, go out and get others to fill up the banquet because these that I invited first are not coming. So there's something else to this. It's not that they're just good excuses that are rejected. It's got to be more about motive. It's got to be more about choosing something over the banquet. There has to be the opportunity to make this choice in place of the banquet. And I think that's what gets God's attention. See, Ecclesiastes tells us there's nothing new under the sun. Solomon wrote it. He said there's nothing new under the sun. Things just come and they go. But we get so caught up in the latest thing, in the newest thing, in what everybody else is doing, and we decide that that is competition with God. I want to share something that's really close to my heart today. I don't know if America is ever going to experience revival. I don't know if Unity Wesleyan Church is ever going to experience revival. But I do know this. We won't ever experience revival if we decide to make other things our priority in front of God. And I'm not talking about bad things. I'm talking about even noble things. I'm talking about if your children keep you away from church and you want church to be a big part of your life, it's not going to be. I mean, that's just logic. If you want to see the church grow, then you need to be here. I mean, that's just logic to me. You see, people say, oh, I hope our church will grow, and then they're not here. And I think, well, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you want the church to grow, you need to come here. If you want to experience revival, you need to make the effort to be revived. If you want to have, you know, John is talking about worship. If you want to experience worship, you have to come in a worshipful spirit. I mean, that's just logic. And I'm really concerned about our spiritual temperature. I want to show you something that's kind of cute. It's kind of funny. It's a British skit, so they're kind of hard to understand what they say. But I want to show you this. It's only 2.5 minutes that I'm going to show you. So it's very brief. But I wanted to show it because it's going to put you in the frame of mind of the last point I want to make, and it's very important. Let's watch it, Ron.
Now, Mr. Anthony, you asked us to advise you which job in life you were best suited for.
That is correct, yes.
Well, I now have the results here of the interviews and the aptitude test that you took last week, and from them we've built up a pretty clear picture of the sort of person that you are. And I think I can say without fear of contradiction that the ideal job for you is chartered accountancy.
But I am a chartered accountant.
Very good. Well, back to the office with you then.
No. You don't understand. I've been a chartered accountant for the last 20 years. I want a new job. Something exciting that will let me live.
Well, chartered accountancy is rather exciting, isn't it?
Exciting? No, it's not. It's dull. 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 My God, it's dull. It's so desperately dull and tedious and stuffy and boring and desperately dull.
Well, yes, Mr. Angevy, but you see, your report here says that you are an extremely dull person. You see, our experts describe you as an appallingly dull fellow, unimaginative, timid, lacking in initiative, spineless, easily dominated, no sense of humor, tedious company, and irrepressibly drab and awful. And whereas in most professions these would be considerable drawbacks, in chartered accountancy they're a positive boon.
Don't you see, I came here to find a new job, a new life, a new meaning to my existence. Can't you help me?
Well, do you have any idea of what you want to do?
Yes. Yes, I have.
What?
Lion taming!
Yes, yes. Of course, it's a bit of a jump, isn't it? I mean, chartered accountancy to lion taming in one go. You don't think it might be better if you worked your way towards lion taming, say, via banking?
No! No! I don't want to wait! At 9 o'clock tomorrow, I want to be in there taming!
Fine, fine. But do you have any qualifications?
Yes, I've got a hat.
A hat?
Yes, a hat. A lion-taming hat. A hat with lion tamer on it. I got it at Harrods. And it lights up saying lion tamer in great big neon letters so you can tame them after dark when they're less stroppy.
I see.
And you can claim reasonable wear and tear, switch it off during the daytime, claim reasonable wear and tear as allowable professional expenses under paragraph 335B.
Yes, I do follow, Mr. Angevy, but you see, the snag is, if I now call Mr. Chipperfield and say to him, look here, I've got a 45-year-old chartered accountant with me who wants to become a lion tamer, his first question is not going to be, does he have his own hat? He's going to...
All right. The reason I wanted to show you that was to make this last point. Did you hear what Michael Palin, the guy who had come into the office, said? He wanted excitement. He wanted something new in his life. He wanted to live, you see. And sometimes, as crazy as that skit is, that's the attitude we take when we meet the Lord. When we become Christians, we come and we think, I want excitement. I want to have what this person has. But you know what? I want to do it on my terms. I want a relationship with God on my terms. I want to do it my way. I want it to all be decided through what I want to do, through my will. See, this guy wants to be a lion tamer. He has a hat. That's all he's got. It's all the experience he has. We find out about God. We see people talking about God and about loving God and what he's done. And we say, okay, I want some of that. I want that in my life. That sounds good to me. I want to do that. And then you know what happens? A little bit of discouragement. A little bit of frustration. Things we were not prepared to encounter. Because we just wanted excitement. We just wanted the sensation. That we just wanted the supernatural experience. I want to share something with you. The supernatural experience doesn't last. That initial jolt at the altar. You know, there are times in which faith is dry. There are times in which you are criticized. There are times in which you sit there and you think, am I really sold out to believing all that I've said I believe? Do I trust God to get me through this? My children look at me different. My parents look at me different. My spouse looks at me different. I said I wanted to be a Christian, but you know, I didn't count on all that. I just wanted the excitement part of it. I just wanted the good part of it. And I want to tell you something, unless you're willing to go through the trials and the tribulations and the difficulties, you don't know what being a Christian is all about. And the sad thing is, we live in a society where we're just trying to get everybody in church and get them saved as quickly as we possibly can, thinking that we've done our job without being upfront with them and saying, look, if you become a Christian, it's a hard life. I want to share something with you. You know what? Preaching to me is very easy. I'm very blessed. God made it to where I can get up in front of you and I don't have stage fright. You know, I'm not all nervous and my knees don't knock and all that stuff. I've seen people get up and just talk to the congregation. They're so nervous they can't hardly stand it. I think, why are they so nervous? You know, these people want them to do good. But I say, but Mark, it's so easy for you. Well, God gave me that ability. But I want to tell you something. Sometimes getting up in front of people, I can make it look real easy. And it doesn't take long before in just, you know, and I know Pastor Forbes has experienced this too. Pastor John, if you haven't, you will. It won't take long before somebody in your congregation thinks, you know, pastoring seems like something pretty easy. I could do that too. And they think, you know, it doesn't look that hard. I mean, you know, think about it. You only work, what, 2-3 hours a week and 4 men come and pick up all your money, right? What an easy job. And you start to think about things like that. Listen, I want to tell you something. I've learned that any church can love you for the first year, okay? But make a mistake. Don't be available one time when somebody needed you. Have an opinion that doesn't go along with someone who's influential in the congregation. Discipleship is not about the reward. Discipleship is about faithfulness during dry times in front of the computer when you don't know what to preach about, when nothing seems to come to mind, when you don't know what to do when somebody's experienced a tragedy and nobody in school taught you how to handle that one. It's just not always easy. Discipleship is about faithfulness in the midst of difficulty. And I get upset with the church today because we don't count the cost of being a disciple the way Jesus wanted us to. He gives us that beautiful parable about the banquet. And it's important we realize that the banquet is, you know, it's the marriage supper of the Lamb that he's illustrating here. Nothing more important than that. You know, I said before that it's hard for us to trust people. See, I'm going to tell you something. It was hard for me as a young child to think about going to heaven. You know why? Because I thought we'd get bored. I thought eternity would be boring. And that didn't seem like heaven to me. You know the reason that was so difficult to me? But it's because I didn't trust that God knew what was best. I thought I knew what was best for me. And so it was tough for me to trust God. Does God really, I mean, you know, you sit there and think, is it really going to be better in heaven? I mean, you know, has God really got this all figured out? Because I think I know what's best for me. Well, after he gives this banquet parable, I digress, I want you to hear what he says next. It's in the same chapter of the same book. Listen to what Jesus says. Verse 26. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Now, obviously, the phrase hate is a little off. It's one of these things that's a translation issue because obviously Jesus didn't teach us to hate. That would contradict anyone hating his brother, and that's not the situation. A more accurate depiction would be that doesn't put me ahead of them. Okay? Relatively speaking, we should love God so much that the relationship with our own family would almost look like hate because he should be that much more of our heart. Does that make sense? Okay. We continue. Listen to verse 27. And anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Notice he didn't say, and anyone who chooses to occasionally put his cross down will let that slide. He said, anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Well, what does that mean? Keep reading. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, this fellow began to build and was not able to finish. Let's pause for just a second. We meet God. We say, I want to follow the Lord. I want to be a Christian. We say, I want to lay him at the foundation of my life. And we do it so rapidly that we don't really consider whether we're going to finish the race or not. Because basically we grab him, first of all, for fire insurance, don't we? We just don't want to go to hell. So we really are meeting him on our terms, not his terms. I want to escape hell, so I want a relationship with God. Now, God, this is the way it's going to be. You're going to save me, and if I don't have anything else that I'd rather be doing, I'll be in church on Sunday. See, that's the way we start our relationship with God. Because you know what? We think we know what's best for us. God doesn't. And you're going to tell me, preacher, you mean to tell me that if I get serious about God in 2014, if I get serious about the church, if I get serious about my spiritual life, reading the Bible, praying, doing my devotions, and getting involved in serving the Lord, you mean to tell me I'm going to enjoy that more than what I'm already doing? Well, it certainly tells me in these scriptures that you're not a real Christian if you haven't decided to do it that way. Count the cost. You say, I want to be His disciple. Well, then you better pick up a cross and start carrying it. You better start loving Him more than anything else. You say, but I don't know that that'll be best for me because I kind of like the way it is now. Then you're meeting Him on your terms and you're not trusting Him. You don't really believe that this life is best for you. You don't really believe this word. You don't really believe, seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. You don't believe that. Because if you did, you'd seek Him first. Because He knows what's best for you. He knows what will make you joyful. He knows actually what will sustain you and make you happy. Do you trust Him with that knowledge? Or do you think you still know what's best for you? Continue. Listen to this. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Will he not first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. He's saying, listen, you alone cannot battle the trials of this world. You cannot do it. It is too great an enemy. And you better figure out a way to negotiate. And the only way that you can negotiate is to get the greatest ally down from the cross and put him in your heart. You better make arrangements to fight this battle because it's coming after you. And if you want peace, you better go to the author of it, the prince of it. To finish this passage, salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is fit neither for the soil nor for the manure pile. It is thrown out. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? That's a terrifying passage because I truly hope that we can be made salty again. That we can season our world again. That it's not too late for us. That we're worth more than being cast in the manure pile. How is your saltiness? How is your flavor today? Jesus says, understand this before you decide to sign up to be on my team, basically. He says, let's just be honest with one another. I love Jesus because He's so honest and upfront with me. He says, it's not going to be a free ride. It's not going to be an easy path, get out of hell free card. He says, there's going to be something expected of you too. But if you trust me, it'll be worth it all. If you trust me, it will be truly living. It will be joyful. But you got to trust me. You got to meet me on my terms. Stop asking me just to meet you on yours. How is your relationship with Him today? You know, this tells me that practicing Christianity requires stamina. You know, when you play football or whatever, it takes a while before you build up the stamina. And you hate practice. I hated practice when I played ball. I couldn't stand it. Hated the exercising, hated running the laps, and I hated hitting, you know, and it hurt, you know, to run into one another for absolutely no reason other than to run into one another. And you did those things over and over and over. I was a catcher in baseball. I hated my dad was the coach. He'd say, Mark, put the stuff on. It's 80, 90 degrees, and I'm behind the plate, you know, and it's batting practice, and all you are really is a backstop. Because nobody's counting strikes or balls. He just throw to, you know, it's just, You hate practice. But if you don't practice, you don't build stamina. Because there will come a time, and there were times when I was glad I had practiced, because I could dig deeper. I could go longer. I could still be counted when everybody else was out. How is your relationship with the Lord today? As you look back over 2013, I want you to understand that you are at this point, at this moment, in this time, in this building, for a reason. And before we get into 2014, it's time to assess just how serious we are about Him. It's time to assess if we're really ready to take on the responsibilities of being a Christian and a Christian church. I have great hopes for our church in the future, but it will only come to pass if He is the most important thing to us as individuals and to our church as a family. And you know what? If He becomes that, there's no guarantee of revival. But if He's not that, there's guarantee that there won't be. Would you stand with me? Next week, we're going to talk about the game plan for 2014. Don't start looking and thinking, I don't think I can be there next week. That's exactly what I'm talking about today. If you want to know the game plan for 2014, you'll be here. So we're going to talk about it. Would you bow your heads with me? I wonder, before we close, and does there need to be a fresh commitment before we start the next year from you? As we end 2013, has it been one-sided for you, the relationship with God? You know what? I'm not even going to call you to the altar about it, because I believe the Holy Spirit's already spoken to you right where you are. But I would like to pray with you about that. I don't do this very often. I want every head bowed, every eye closed. But if you have a need in your heart and you say, you know, preacher, I've not been what I should have been in 2013. I'm going to recommit myself, and I'm going to acknowledge it's going to be His way this year. Or I'm going to do my best to do it. But I want you to pray for me that I'll be able to do it. Would you slip your hand up very quickly and put it down? Yes, I see those hands. Yes, I see them. I'll be praying for you. Yes, I see those hands. Bless you.